All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you, and welcome everybody to the U.S. EDI Task Force. And I appreciate you joining us today. My name is Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and we have a fast-moving meeting today. So I'm going to open it up quickly with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Present.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
I'm here. Good morning.
Ricky Bloomfield. Hans Butendijk. Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Gerges. Ken Kawamoto.
Good morning.
John Kilbourne.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Clem McDonald. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Tasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Daniel Vreeman.
Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you. And I'll now turn it over to our co-chairs, Stephen and Leslie.
Thank you so much, Mike. Just for the record, I see both Clem and Ricky have joined, so we've got them down. Well, thank you all for joining us today. We do have a shortened meeting because of the ONC meeting, which starts in, I think, an hour and a half. The ONC meeting yesterday was excellent. I hope many of you have time to attend today. It's a really great great cast of characters that are presenting there. So we wanted to take advantage of this additional hour, knowing that we have only a little time left to prepare our recommendations to the HITAC, which are going to be due, I think it's on the 15th of April, if I recall. And so we've got a few weeks to go. Again, we're focusing on the task 1C at this point. But just to be clear, past meeting notes continue to be posted as they are finalized to the website, so people can have the opportunity to look at those as you see fit and raise any concerns that you have. I think we're largely done with task 1B at this point and have collected everybody's input on that, but if new items come up, you're certainly welcome to bring them to our attention. And again, with Task 1C, you will recall last time there were a number of items that we were going to come back to revisit. Is Al with us today? Al, you are. I see you.
I am.
If you wanted to bring up the USCDI Task Force member recommendations spreadsheet in whatever level of Zoom you think is most appropriate. I invite people to be looking at that yourself in real time so that you can see just what you want. And then Al will also have that up. And we want to complete task force recommendations. We've had a number of discussions on 1C items, and we want to try to complete our recommendations. So want to turn it over to Michelle Schreiber, who was discussing a number of recommendations from CMS that we had some questions on. So Michelle, if you can kind of give us an overview of what your team is suggesting, and then drive us through the 1C items for which you seek our support.
So thank you. And first, I want to express to the entire committee on behalf of CMS our thanks for listening to the recommendations. I had a number of meetings during the week with others as well. And just to clarify a few things, and I hopefully can find them on the table. I do want to close out our recommendation on problem list, because there was a lot of discussion about that, whether or not to include ICD-10 along with SNOMED for problem lists. We had a conversation with the VA recently, and we recognize that there are people who would prefer just SNOMED, not adding ICD-10, but CMS still believes that because of the ubiquity of coding and information that occurs in ICD-10. We would like to continue to support having both. Not that you have to have both in the same field, so it's more like either, but adding ICD-10. And I think that the VA agrees. I don't know if John Kilbourn is on and wanted to say that, and wanted to, you know, provide their opinion. But I just wanted to clarify that that's a conversation we had with them. Is John on? Do you know?
I can corroborate that statement, Michelle. Yeah, we discussed it yesterday, and we think in the interest of the greater good and future data elements that would be more SNOMED specific for quality measures and the hope of working closely with CMS, we are going along with this.
So thank you.
Michelle, just to be clear, so we've got a couple of different issues, but you're speaking specifically about problem list diagnoses, correct?
Diagnoses, that is correct.
Okay, so I'm trying to find it on our list.
Table. I'm sorry, I couldn't.
Okay, that we'll find it. We'll find it. So before we leave that item, the recommendation then is that for problem list diagnoses, that the suggestion is that either ICD-10 and or SNOMED would be acceptable coding for that data when it is transmitted. Does anybody have any objection to that recommendation? All right. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me personally. So I do appreciate that. Still trying to figure out what row it's on, but we will find it.
Stephen, it might be row 43.
We're in the editable. We're looking in the editable one. Is that right?
Yeah. There we go. Yes, 43. That is it. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate your help. So we currently list suggest that ICD-10 be allowable for coding problem list diagnoses, and it says consider requiring ICD-10 while continuing to allow or require the use of SNOMED. Sounds like at this point we're simply saying that either or both, if I'm not incorrect, would be acceptable. Is that does anyone have a different understanding? Good. All right, we will. I'll change that up. And we'll consider that final. Okay,
Stephen,
Michelle, where do you want to go from there?
Sorry.
Yes, sir.
So just to go back to this, by adding ICD-10 as an applicable standard, that would require ICD-10 as well. Just wanted to be clear on, like, what it means to add. And that's fine to have that recommendation, but it's any code is allowable, but only one code currently is tested, and that's SNOMED. So the implications of adding ICD-10 as an applicable standard would be that it is now required.
Okay, that's interesting.
So that would be required for availability, but not required for use. It would be either one for use, just to be clear?
Yeah, adding it to USCDI just think that adds to the requirement for certification.
Thank you.
So we would add it as an allowable standard for problem list diagnoses. It would have to be tested and supported, but it would not, in a given transmission, would it still be acceptable to send only SNOMED?
Sure. For Ed, that would always
okay.
be. It's the content, it would still be acceptable to send. It would be acceptable to send either one because both would be required of the system to be able to do.
Okay, I think that's exactly what we want. Sorry, I'm trying to capture that in the notes here. Perfect, okay. So ICD-10 be added as an allowable standard. Perfect. All right, where do you want to go next, Michelle?
Okay, 7. We had talked about the encounter disposition and the discharge disposition. So we would like to formally recommend the discharge disposition just from the hospital. to start there. We recognize in future years we would need more.
Which line again, Michelle?
I'm on seven. Spreadsheet open in front of me.
So what we had jotted down as a recommendation last time is include in version 2 a requirement for encounter disposition for hospital and ED encounters. Signal that this should be included for long-term care facilities when possible.
Okay, we're good.
You're comfortable with that, Michelle?
Yes.
And does anyone on the task force have any objection to that?
I just have a question, Michelle, on ED encounters. Then we're talking about short stay, observation stay, as well as elopement, and then also discharge to the hospital, correct?
I caught the hospital. I caught ED. Then you said something about short stay and OBS and something else.
Yeah, short stay, observation stays, elopement, and then also admit to the hospital?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Just clarifying.
Although this
and there was another comment. Feel free to use the hand-raising feature, please.
Yeah.
Sorry, Michelle. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. The next is line 8, clarification.
Okay, wait. Before we leave line 7, Dan has his hand up.
Yep.
Thanks. Sorry. And I'm reviewing the data element. I just want to be clear, the implication for the applicable standard of discharge disposition is simply the HL7 code system. Is that true? Or is there also, there's a separate thing on encounter location, and I think we had some discussion about the difference between these kinds of things, but I just want to be clear about the coding system that we're recommending. If we move this forward.
And before I ask Al to comment on that, I will point out that Leslie added column P to our spreadsheet where the applicable standards were listed. Leslie, not being a standards expert per se, or claiming to be one, has invited people to comment on the standards, but I think this was sort of a copy paste from the website. So, Al, do you want to comment on the question?
I would need to know, adding an HL7 code system is a little bit of a departure from what we've done in the past. But as a defined as a code system, that could work. Something that we'd have to look at if we were to require that particular code system of discharge disposition. As a separate, it's like a value set, but I think it's called a code system in HL7. If it seems like there were it's fine to recommend that. If it seems like there are difficulties with adding an HL7 value set or an HL7 code system, it would probably mean that we just wouldn't have a required standard, an applicable standard. But that's fine to put that forward.
So please clarify what would be the specific recommendation, Dan.
Well, I mean, if the stated recommendation is to require the code system called discharge, the HL7 code system called discharge disposition, if that applicable standard, it would mean the discharge disposition would have to come out of that code system. And that, which, if we test it rigorously, we would validate that it came out of that code system. What all of the other encounters are, all of the other applicable standards are other STO, well, obviously HL7 is an STO, but STO-based full code systems. So, I think that discharge disposition is constrained to SNOMED. I might be wrong on that. I can have a look and see what the content is, but I think that's fine to put that forward. If the intent is to constrain it to the HL7 code system, then that's something that we would have to look at to see if that's a feasible approach versus just putting something that represents disposition in the disposition field.
Hans has a comment.
So, I just wanted to clarify, Dan. I just wanted to clarify Dan's recommendation. Dan, is your recommendation that we do specify the HL7 code system as the applicable standard for discharge disposition?
I am cross-referencing to see right now if it is what's bound in the U.S. core profile. Maybe Hans has that answer. I would recommend that precisely because I feel that it's more helpful to have a applicable standard rather than none when we bring a new data element forward. And I appreciate Al's points that there might be some additional evaluation and consideration of a HL7 stewarded code system, but at this point I would support the recommendation to include the coding system as proposed in the data element.
Good morning, Ed. I just looked at, and I put in the chat the link to what currently the list is that FHIR US Core currently in its latest build has. It's a must support. It's listed as an example binding. So it's not necessarily tied to just that, but frequently what happens is that those are the ones supported, and I would still have to double check to convert to ADT messages where typically these ones are widely used, and I just want to double check that it's the same as what's used there, which would mean is that everybody pretty much is using that. So that's the one that I have not had a chance to look at yet to see what do we do in version 2, because that's operational everywhere. And that's the likely one, and I need to check with CCDA. But it's example, which means it's not that strongly.
Okay. Anybody uncomfortable with our leaving our recommendation on this one as a recommendation that the HL7 code system be leveraged as the application? All right. If Hans, you have additional information on that, just let us know.
Yep.
Okay, Michelle, I want to keep going through your list and get to conclusion
Thank you.
Doing.
Stephen, I can't. My screen is my whole system. I think it's frozen right now, so I think I'm going to have to reboot. So bear with me. If maybe
Thank
somebody
you so
else.
Much.
I'll
think the most important thing is for folks to follow along themselves, so they can. Size and scroll as need be. It's hard to depend on your display in any case. Michelle?
The next one I have is on line 8, which is encounter location. I think we may have closed this out last time, our recommendation just being location only within a hospital. This is not including an address, and it would be for ICU, ED, and NICU.
So this encounter location, just to clarify, this is really the type of service location within a hospital versus the hospital location. And
that is
so.
Okay.
The hospital and
it seems like it's covered in type. So type, hospital, SNF, what have you. But I believe that's covered in type.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
So get this right in the Google Doc. Okay, so we are on row 8, encounter location. I'm adding your comment that you just included, but our recommendation is leave as level 2 and encourage industry to work on this for a future version of USCDI, correct?
Yeah, I agree. Correct.
So not including VT, ICU, ED, and NICU?
No, that is
correct. Okay, just clarifying.
All right. Anyone have any questions about that recommendation on Rule 8? Perfect.
The next one I'm trying to find the row.
Actually, Michelle, before we leave, I'm sorry, I realized that on row 7, we did not set a priority as a task force, which I'd like to do, and then we'll go back. Well, so we suggested just roughly prioritizing 3 for each of these as we prepare our comments. For the encounter disposition, inclusion in version 2, does anybody feel to be a 1, 2, or 3? Personally, I think CMS's recommendation makes it a pretty high priority for us, so I would tend to give it a 1 at this moment, but does anyone feel differently? All right, great. And then, I'm sorry, Michelle, I'm going to go back to the first one we discussed, the problem list with ICD-10, which, again, Mark was on row 30-something.
43, I think it was.
43.
This spreadsheet is way too long. Okay. Again, prioritization, I think we're all pretty comfortable with this as a good thing to do. Leave it as a 1. All right, I'm seeing the 2 heads nodding. Hearing nothing. Let's go back up, Michelle, to where to make each other like that. Okay, so we were on row. Where do you want to go next?
I want to go to the identification for the identifier. I think that we had closed out 10. We had closed out, I thought, 12, the facility organization. That's just the CCN number. There was the question of the identifier, the MBI, the Medicare beneficiary identifier, and we had proposed that, and there was some conversation that in the past people had wanted that, but there was an issue not to do it. We queried across CMS and others. We can't find a reason not to, but because there is this memory bank of there having been an issue, we would like to remove this one for further evaluation and study. So we will not recommend the MBI. It was under identification. I'm trying to find the line.
Okay. Is that row 40?
I know it was like in the 30s or something.
Yes, 40, indeed. I was just using the sort function myself. So 40 is under data classification, demographics, data element, patient ID, and Medicare patient ID, MBI.
So we changed the recommendation to V3.
I see that. Okay, thank you. Does anyone have any questions or concerns about that?
This is Leslie, and I think Clem also pointed out that this is something that is highly valuable and used and helpful to coordinate identities across multiple health systems and beyond. So I guess I don't understand why not. And Mark has his hands up as well, so I'll leave it there and pass it on to Mark.
The only reason why not is we heard from others that there were problems with this in the past, and we wanted to investigate what those might be. I couldn't come across anyone who said not to at CMS.
So, Stephen, Leslie, I think I'd recommend that we do a little more, that we just make this pending and do a little more investigation first before making a decision.
Right.
This is John, real fast. My memory is that there was a law, like not even a rule, a law, that said that it's kind of, you know, we will not use patient identifiers. And that's just a very vague memory, but it was a big deal because it was a law.
That's just it. There are some people who have memories around this. I can't find it. We can't find it. But we would like to table this pending investigation.
So there actually is a law that continues to float around the federal government that prevents the use of federal funds for the development of a universal patient identifier. That's pretty distinct from the question of whether the Medicare patient ID is going to be part of the USCDI. Medicare patient ID is an identifier that exists for a certain subset of patients. You know, we could certainly suggest including it. It's a political issue around people's perception of what supports patient privacy that we're not going to solve here, but I don't think that would prevent us from suggesting this for version two.
And Stephen,
I
don't think the political issue is around the Medicare identifier. I think it's around so there's no political. Okay.
Agree.
We had
selected as a requirement of service for Medicare. So anyone who's seen a Medicare patient does have to collect that information. It's already prevalent.
Al?
So we had just, as some of you may know, one of the data elements that was submitted for addition to USCDI-V2 is patient identifier. And that's a lot closer to the concept of unique patient identifier, which is specifically prohibited. And we've gotten confirmation recently explicitly from Office of General Counsel that would not be an acceptable, that would be in violation of that law. I think the question that maybe it would change the framing, and I can get verification about whether or not Medicaid benefit ID number would qualify as a unique patient identifier versus simply an insurer, like a policy number. And it's a specific kind of policy number, but a policy number versus a patient identifier might be enough of a distinction to allow something like that to go through. But I'm asking that specific question right now to the people that have more knowledge of what the OGC ruling was. It's possible that the MBI, and you know, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong, the MBI is an insurance number, insurance number related to a patient, but as opposed to a unique identifier.
It's a membership number, so I have my unique identifier for my driver's license, but I still have an insurance card. So it's an identity in that it's like a member number of any other payer.
I mean, if the issue is all around the unique patient identifier, you're right, we couldn't do that. Told that we couldn't address that. The MBI is something that does exist. We would favor it, but we were pulling it back for tabling because there were these underlying questions. I couldn't find anyone at CMS who didn't think we could include it, but there are these underlying questions that we just wanted to do more investigation around.
All right, but again, others can also suggest this as something that we advanced for version two. And as we said, Clem has suggested this. We appreciate the CMS position. Does anyone, including Clem, want to make a recommendation that we either do or don't include this in our report to HITECH?
I'll just restate it. I think we should include it. And I think all the negatives are just confusion about what the rules really are. This is an existing number. It's nothing we're creating new. We just want to put it in the communication.
I think I would echo this, and also for transfers to long-term post-acute care and referrals, I mean, this is a big deal that can eliminate confusion in transitions of care as well as across multiple health systems.
So from a perspective, from ONT's perspective, if this goes forward, then we will apply the test that we've applied to every other patient identifier concept. We'll take that into consideration. If the task force submits something that, you know, our Office of General Counsel says we can't do, then we won't do it. If the recommendation is to do something that OGC says we can do, we consider it. So I think it's fine to go forward with it as a recommendation, and then we'll do what we need to do with everything that we add and figure it out from there.
All right. So I have a motion to include this in V2. Does anyone object to that? We're not going to do full Roberts rules, but I want to make sure that we capture any dissenting views. Okay, good. Then we'll leave it at that. Michelle, thank you for bringing this forward, and we'll leave your name attached to it, but it doesn't really matter because it's going to be a task force recommendation.
Yep.
All right, Michelle, do you have any more?
Just a couple.
Oh, wait, before we leave that one, I'm sorry. Let me point out in column N that we've been told by our experts that U.S. Core does not include this explicitly as an identifier type, and CDA does not explicitly list it as an identifier type. And it's not certification tested. So does that dissuade anyone from our task force recommending it? Specifically interested in Ricky and Hans's views.
So Hans, that's for identity, not for member number with a payer, correct? So this is although I've talked about Medicare patient ID, it is really the member number.
That's fair, and let me double check because it has typically been thought of as a patient identifier. As much as that you write, it's a member identifier for the Medicare insurance. So let me double check whether there is not a spot that it might have been that I overlooked.
Thank you, Hans. Any concerns from the vendor perspective? Either Hans or Sasha, implementation challenges that we need to be aware of?
I don't have any to call out offhand, no.
The thing is that if it is not considered a patient identifier, but it's considered a member identifier, then we might run into some challenges with the amount of payer coverage information that's currently in U.S. Core. That's currently not really addressed in U.S. Core.
Well, I don't think anything you said should stop us from trying it.
It is a identifier that is commonly used, but it's if the criterion is that minimum or no change from existing U.S. Core or CCDA, I think we consider it a member identifier, I think this is starting to clearly indicate that there is data in USCDI that is not quote-unquote clinical per se in nature. It becomes more financial administrative, and how do we start to recognize that and begin to include that, which is a somewhat bigger step in some areas to start to pick that up.
This is Ricky.
Go ahead.
You could potentially get creative here and put it in the patient resource. There's an identifier field, and that's generic. You can include any identifier there. It just needs a specific URI, and I don't know if a URI has been defined for the Medicare a patient identifier. But that could be done independent of the U.S. Core guide itself and potentially included there. I guess the question is whether the patient resource is the right place for this or if you would rather have it live somewhere else. But that seems like it may be a separate discussion than whether or not it should be included. It seems like there are some pathways for it to be included potentially.
But in terms of the timing, if we suggest including this in V2, and ONC takes our word for it and does so, does that give enough time for the FDOs and the vendors to figure out how to share it? Or is this just one of those things, as we have already in USCDI version 1, where, you know, we don't have all of that level of detail worked out. We just say, if you've got it, share it however you can.
Yeah, I think there are definitely a number of open questions. Primarily, where should this be shared? And I think that would require additional discussion, and whether the vendors can map this in the data that they have, or if the expectation is that this would primarily come from Medicare itself. And so I think I don't have an answer to those questions.
And I appreciate that. I'm asking simply, is the lack of answers to those questions, is that a reason not for us to support this?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the sound, Yeah, I think the downside potentially is that if the conclusion is that it truly should not be a patient level identifier as in patient resource, that would cause challenges if we in the meantime started to use that. There's a very interesting debate that can be had behind that. So MBI is being collected. It's being used if you want to get a claim. So it's not that it's not around. If we need to have the answer today, I'd be a little bit hesitant. On the other hand, if we have until next week, we can just get a feeler out to make sure is there a reasonable sense that patient is the way to go, because anything beyond that would be more substantial enhancements to US Core to make it support.
Okay. I'm going to flag this one as yellow for us to come back to it. I really appreciate Hans and others digging in. But I think, and I'm going to, unless someone objects, put this as a priority two, given the persistent questions. Not that we even know how we're going to use these priorities, but we're going to use them somehow before we're done. We'll come back to this one. Okay, Michelle, where do you want to take us next?
All right, so we took a lot of our requests, you'll see in the rows 20 to version 3. So there's just a couple more that we'll talk about. One is a correction of what we put on the table. And that's line 36, the diagnostic studies and exams with results. We do recommend inclusion of some of these in version 2. So sorry for column I. And we do have a short list of maybe a starter group that CMS uses frequently, in particular cardiology studies, EKGs, echoes, pulmonary function studies, and bone density. And we have those in K.
So you use these frequently for quality measures.
Right.
All right. And
clinicians use them frequently too, so.
Yes,
clinicians,
indeed.
From a patient point of view, these are essential. Clinicians use these all the time. Patients look for these results.
All right, so again, the list as you included in 36K is mammogram, colonoscopy, DEXA, echocardiograms, including ejection fraction and PFTs.
Correct.
I think this is very consistent with where our discussion was a couple of weeks back on the sort of the idea of coming up with a short list to start this process, and knowing that in the future this could and should expand to include other diagnostic studies and exams with results.
Hey, Steve, could I weigh in?
Actually, Clem, raise your hand, and we'll let Sasha go first.
Okay.
I just had a question. I know it's come up in other contexts where we've talked about whether things we might add to USCDI would be applicable to all products pursuing certification to USCDI. But I guess with some of these scans, again, would we expect that every product that achieves certification would be able to document all of these types of diagnostic results? Or would some products be sort of capturing them and others would be viewing them, like if they were received from another system? I just don't want us to accidentally sort of require something that would be inapplicable to all products in the market by inclusion in USCDI before we figure out some of the scoping considerations.
Okay. I've captured your question, Clem.
Well,
go ahead,
I'll
ask Al to comment.
Yeah, just one more. You know, glaucoma causes blindness, and there's a simple measure, you know, the tonometry. And they actually, I think, requested that. Yeah, it was one of the things requested in the last comment period from the National Institute of Ophthalmology, right? So it just seems it's so easy. You know, there's right and left eye, and it's a pressure. And you want it in quality. You want to kind of make sure people are doing it as people get older, so, or if they're following their medicine. So I would just beg for one little teeny itsy-bitsy more, two more fields.
Okay, Al, do you want to respond to the questions on the table?
So to Sasha's point, that would be one of our, certainly the the applicability of to systems that would have to be able to capture capture or access or exchange this information was certainly one of the key factors in our decision about whether or not something can be or should be added to OCDI. Depending on how specific we make this recommendation, it could be more or less applicable to more systems. So I think that this would be the kind of feedback that we'd like to see before we made a decision about, you know, whether or not it should be added. Is it added only for inpatient? Is it only added for outpatient? Is it only added for OBS or what? And if it's more generic, to be able to capture more diagnostic studies, then it might be more applicable. So that would just be something that we would have to, that would go into the calculus of adding it or not.
Actually, Al, I think the question is a little more generic, which is to say, you know, and we keep circling back to this question, what exactly does it mean when a data element is included in USCDI? Does it mean that every certified system has to have the ability to receive and hold the data and presumably display it to users? Or does it mean that every system has to be able to be built so as to capture the data? So again, I mean, if you've got a pediatric, you know, EHR, or a, you know, a, if you've got a specialty EHR that you've built for dermatology, and we include, you know, left eye pressure, does the dermatology system need to have a screen for a dermatologist to collect the left eye pressure, or does that system just need to have the ability to accept left eye pressure if it's sent by another system and stick it somewhere and make it available to its users? I think that's the question.
Yeah. So, that's a comment. That's a really frequent question. So, what it means is USCDI is invoked in 7 or 8 of our certification criteria. So, must include in an API, must include in a certain CCDAs, all of the data elements that are contained within USCDI, right? So that's what we cite USCDI in those criteria. And what it means is that a system that's certified to those criteria must be able to capture and exchange using that particular certification function those data elements. And so in the sense that if a dermatology specific system is certified to B1 for transitions of care, it would have to produce a CCDA that is able to capture that data element, intraocular pressure, and provide and compile it into a transitions of care CCDA. That's specifically what that means to have. And if that certified system is certified to the criteria that requires USCDI, then yes, it would have to do that.
Okay, so go ahead, Clem.
Well, it's just we agonize over all this stuff while physicians are going without it. And I mean, what do we do with labs? Why don't we just do the same rules with labs? You know, they're all observations, have a very similar structure. What if we just apply the same rule to these as we do to labs? I don't know what that rule is in practice. It's just from a master file. It should just be a change in a master file, not a whole constructed specific data structure for each of these tests.
Daniel has a comment as well. Daniel?
Yeah, thank you. I was going to build on what Clem said. You know, to be clear, right, to produce a CCDA or something in this context effectively means to produce a results section, which might have a bunch of stuff in it, including all kinds of tests and so forth. So it's not as if there needs to be a particular field with a term for, you know, a pulmonary function test in every record. It just means it has to produce a section that could be blank if there were none, but has, you know, coded diagnostic test results, and I think it'd be a good thing to have that.
Al, do you see it differently?
No, I think that I agree that there's, you know, this is one of the things we had considered. We had considered something a broader concept such as observation. We actually had considered diagnostic studies, which is, you know, more generic than diagnostic imaging or diagnostic labs. We had considered those concepts to be added to draft B2, and you know, it's still a reasonable recommendation, and understand the value of having you know, the ability to I think that every system has the ability to capture a vast variety of observations, including the ones that are listed here.
Non-tests can be to add as well too when you're finished. Sorry, I didn't rest.
I'm finished, but I didn't hear what you asked.
I'm sorry, Sasha and Hans both have a comment to add to this. So, Sasha, you want to go?
Oh, this is Sasha. So, I'll defer to Hans if he's deeper into this than I am. But my concern is just that some types of the diagnostic studies have quite specialized reports to express their output. And I don't know that those, while some of them could be generalized in the way that Dan and Clem describe, I'm not sure all of the examples that Michelle listed would lend themselves to that. And it might require further follow-up before we made a recommendation.
Yeah, no, I was going to say pretty much the same as Sasha. And I highlight that in conceptually, these are indeed, and I have no disagreement with Clem and Dan, that these are grounded primarily in observation. But there is that variety out there, and what we've seen in FHIR US Core is that there are variations that are helpful to subsequently profile. That currently there are profiles defined in US Core that are very specific as a result, and that a more general observation or other things are not there. So in order to start to do this, the suggestion that some have considered is to say, focus on a smaller group that are more clearly agreed to, that at least the vocabulary is there, that there starts to be agreement to, but that the actual structure in which that is being expressed, given the variety of it, where are there groupings that need more information, less information, is some core set of data sufficient across the board, that needs a little bit more work. Because yes, there is in CCDA, there's the results section, and yes, in FHIR, there's observation, but in US Core or in some of the guidance, the implementation guide, there's more around it. What is the minimum data set that you need to have around each one of those? What's the vocabulary to use, et cetera, that has not been as clearly fleshed out. So it would require work to get that guidance. So perhaps a smaller, much more focused initial set, and then grow that and figure out how to do it.
And Hans, the smaller, more focused set would be how we would implement testing. It would be a smaller set of data that would have to be, you know, incorporated and reproduced in a report. That would be how we could, you know, implement such that small focus. But I did want to note that some of the examples that are in column K, I think may already be covered by diagnostic imaging report. You know, when making a specific recommendation about what scope of the diagnostic studies is supposed to be, I would recommend to make
sure. So that's a really good point, Al. Right. So mammogram and DEXA are clearly imaging studies, so would not need to be included in this short list. That's helpful. I don't think you could necessarily. one could argue whether a cardiac echocardiogram is an imaging study or not. But clearly colonoscopy and PFTs are different. So you make a good point that we could narrow this list by excluding mammography and DEXA because those are already included, which narrows it down to a pretty small number of additional diagnostic studies and exams with results that would need to be tested. Specifically, cardiac exams, which is really to say echocardiograms, I think is really what you're asking for, Michelle, because of the linkage to ECQMs, PFTs.
There are a number of measures that link to echocardiogram, in particular the ejection fraction.
Okay, but you're not talking about ECGs specifically, which have the confusing aspect of having both an image and a report and a number of discrete data elements, correct? You're speaking about echocardiograms in particular.
Yeah, we would be okay tabling the conversation around EKGs. Echocardiograms and stress tests, something that shows left ventricular function, I think would be important.
Hans and Clem have further comments, but I realize we have a public comment in a few minutes too, Stephen. Comments from him, Clem.
Is that my turn? Well, you know, all we do for 40 years is delay. And, you know, I'll have to tell you, I'm not going to live another 40 years. And what the hell are we doing? This is stuff everybody needs. And we're talking about the imaging report, I'll be narrative. These things have structure in them. I can send you codes for all of them. Now, people may choose other ones, but there's codes set up for this. They're being sent in places for this. EKGs were sent by Marquette in a standard way for 40 years, almost, and now it's GE, and they're still 80% of the market. It's trivial. We did it in 4 days at Reagan Street before computers were fast. So it's frustrating. There are all these reasons why not to act.
Okay, I love your passion, Clem, truly. Hans, last word before we try to finalize our position on this.
Actually, a question for Al indicates that we can narrow based on the tests. I think in as part of that is that whatever the list is that comes up is that the clarity on what's the expectations for those that are not tested. And I understand and I'm completely in agreement with Clem's sentiments. And we worked together on a number of these for many years, decades, it feels like. The question that in the way that it's currently being described, can we get, and what is the extent to which we're going to say there is a generic structure in which you can put it, or do some of these require more specific structures based on what's happening? I'm quite familiar with how you can put it in generic solutions, which also has yielded different interpretations of how then to do it. So where do we just strike the balance on that? So that's the challenge. But what does it mean that if it's not tested on what that means for certification and ongoing surveillance? That would be helpful to understand that distinction.
Hold on, that was for me?
Yes, sorry.
I just think that because, you know, if we want this to be more useful to more people, then we would want to, you know, dial back a little bit and be less specific. But that, you know, the sensor has many different ways of representing an observation. If we were to go all the way to that level, there's many different ways, many different code systems that could represent things that are considered observations, and then observation results as well. There's a balance between being permissive and allowing a system, or requiring that a system is more permissive in being able to capture things like this. But then it's how specific do we get to say this system is certified this function, because we have to. We can't say a system has to be able to capture every conceivable observation. It's not feasible to build. It's not feasible to require.
We're going to cut it off. Al, I'm going to cut you off there. We're going to go to public comments.
Okay, thank you, operator. Can we please open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments.
Thank you. And while we're waiting, I'm just going to tell the group that I'm going to put a priority two on the one that we just discussed, because I think priority one is a no-brainer that we all agree with. Priority two is that there's still some persistent concern and disagreement. So just put that there. Public comments?
There are no comments at this time.
Thank you so much. So thank you for this discussion, Mark.
Sorry, taking off mute. Will we come back at the end and look at the priority numbers that we've assigned to sort of look at them collectively and holistically?
That's my plan. Yeah, we'll back up the ones, the twos, the threes to determine our final recommendation.
And I'm asking because there may be some where there is some degree of uncertainty that we think are higher priority than some of the no-brainers that we've also talked about. So it, we'll be able to look at it then.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. We are 3 minutes from the end. Michelle, did you have any other that you wanted to be sure we touched on?
We moved most things to V3 that we had. There's just a couple of comments. One is that we want to strongly support putting in elements of social determinants of health and think that's an extremely high priority. Two is we have on line 31 orders, that there's an orders class, and particularly we would like to advocate for orders around end-of-life care, for example, palliative care, comfort care. And I think that others had raised an issue like that. And then finally, and I don't see it on the spreadsheet anymore, I think we may have closed this one, the insurance type, the all-payer coverage type. Everything else we move to recommending for the future. And we, again, thank you.
All right. Let's see if we can just capture that. So on line, let's go to row 31, where we're talking about orders, types of orders for medical care services that CMS is recommending inclusion in B2, and they've specifically called out orders for referrals to palliative care, hospice, comfort care, as well as DNI, DNR orders, which are a little distinct there. Anyone want to make any comments about that, pro or con?
This is Leslie. That includes pulsed and most orders that are combined permissions of the patient, and where does advanced directives fit in there? So the first question is the pulsed and most orders. Is that included, Michelle?
If those are orders, then yes, Leslie, it's included. Advanced directives generally are not orders. They're documents. So we're looking specifically at things that are ordered.
Okay, I know we don't have time. I would like to talk about this. I definitely support this and also would like to move up advanced directives because one without the other would be a push for medicalization only of end-of-life care, which is consistent with an order set, versus the patient's voice, which is the advanced directive. So those two, in my mind, are inextricable.
So, Leslie, between now and next meeting, I would dig into the advanced directives with regard to where, you know, whether or not that's been submitted and where it was leveled. I do think that's different than orders. So we can come back to this one. Sounds like this would include pulsed and MOLS, because indeed those are orders. So let's come back to this. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention today. We will be meeting on April 6th, the day after the applicability date for inflammation blocking, which is very exciting. And we will see you all there, and hopefully see you later today at the ONC meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.